Hi, I'm Roy Spencer of PermaSeal. For over 45 years, we've helped over 500,000 homeowners make their homes drier, healthier, and more valuable. Our warranties are transferable and estimates are free. Call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Let's talk to a person who is very intimately involved in the Jeffrey Epstein fallout. She represents victims of Jeffrey Epstein. She is licensed to practice in Florida and New York, and she's one of the nation's top legal advocates dedicated to protecting victims of sexual abuse, child pornography, and discrimination. She handled her first sex abuse case in 95. And she secured hundreds of millions of dollars for her client against Catholic Diocese, Boy Scouts, NYC, Board of Education, et cetera. Welcome to the show, Jennifer. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on today, Karen.
I know that you have been very busy with all of this news. You represent the one victim's name that I know that you represent is Maria Farmer. And can you just tell us what your reaction was to this, quote, release of information, non-release of information this week? And then also how the victims, that who you represent, how they are reacting to it?
Well, I'd say personally and also among the victims, I would say deep disappointment and quite a lot of frustration. The prior administrations have been choppy and withholding, but this one seems to be all over the place, promising transparency and delivering anything but. I'll release the records. I have the files. The client list is on my desk, and there are no client files. No one will be charged. No files will be released. It just doesn't make any sense.
And, you know, I guess we don't like to be conspiracy theorists because, you know, we're not operating with facts. But when you have things like this, when you have a suicide in a prison cell, you know, where people should have been watching him, people should have been guarding him, and, you know, someone's asleep because they're on the internet, and there's the jailmate is gone for the day, and linens are there when they're not supposed to be, and you get a sweetheart deal years ago on a sex offense case. Like, how are we ever going to know what really happened with Jeffrey Epstein, and what would it take for us to actually get to the bottom of who he was and what he actually did?
And I don't know if we'll ever have a really fulsome understanding of what happened, but one way we are going to get to the bottom of something relating to Jeffrey Epstein is we did bring a lawsuit, which we filed in May, against the United States, alleging that our client, Maria Farmer, who was the first, as far as we know, the very first person to complain about Jeffrey Epstein in 1996. And then she complained about him again in 2006. But had the government done their job and listened to her and taken even the most minimum steps of trying to find out what was going on, a lot of the 25 years of sex abuse could have been avoided, which is just so much frustration.
Absolutely. And in that lawsuit, which you were kind enough to send me, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you are seeking from the government?
Well, we are seeking, first of all, an understanding of what happened. What happened with Maria's complaint? She made a complaint. She never heard boo about it afterwards. There were complaints made in 2005 to 2008 in connection with the U.S. Attorney's Office. Prosecution or lack of prosecution of Jeffrey Epstein, and that kind of went over the edge also. Very little seemed to be done there also with this sweetheart special deal that he got. So what we'd like to achieve are some answers and some understanding, some accountability to the victims for failing to do their job.
Jennifer, can you tell us what happened to Mary Farmer and how she got involved with this character?
Yes, she was an artist. She still is an artist at the New York Academy of Art in New York City. And she was at the New York Academy of Art art show displaying some of her works, as many other students were doing. She was a graduate student there doing very well. And Jeffrey Epstein wanted to buy one of her paintings. She had already sold it. But the head of the New York Academy of Art came over to her and said, "You need to sell it to Mr. Epstein. You need to do that." And so she did that. They then met. He asked her to be an art consultant. He asked her to come work for him. And, you know, they were kind of off to the races after that.
And do we have any idea how many victims that Jeffrey Epstein abused over the years? Do we have an estimate at all?
We think there's over 1,000. There could be many more than that, but we think it's over 1,000. There were certainly approximately 200 plus that received compensation from the Epstein Victims Compensation Fund, but there are many more than that. Some people didn't want to come forward. Some people couldn't come forward. A lot of reasons. But the government has said that there's 1,000, over 1,000.
And
there's also a larger group that no one has been paying any attention to, and I'm so glad I have the opportunity to speak with you about this, Karen, and get your insight as well. And that's a group of child pornography victims. This is what just came out, which I have been talking for years about the untold story about Jeffrey Epstein, which is child pornography. Finally, the government has admitted that he had thousands of child porn and other illegal videos, and those are victims too.
So this is the first time when we played that clip of Bondi saying that there were disgusting photographs, films, whatever they were. Was this the first time the government admitted that there were such materials?
There were some inklings, but this is the first true admission.
And how?
I've been complaining about this for a long, long time. I've been raising this and asking for information, but really there was nothing until that, nothing major.
And how did you know or suspect that this material was there?
Well, this is a very common connection between child sex abusers and sexual assault abusers and child pornography. It's just very common. Often abusers both produce the child pornography and show the child pornography to the victims. So this is very common, and we had confirmation of that, or the inkling of that, through a report that the government put out through the Office of Professional Responsibility, looking at what happened in the 2005 to 2008 investigation of Epstein, and they talked about the fact that the government cut the investigation off too early, failing to get the computers that Jeffrey Epstein had, and as you may remember, there were photos of this at the time where his computer desk was shown with wires dangling out of the,
yes,
out of the walls and on the desk, where computers were, it looked like, hurriedly taken out of the space. We suspected this for a long time.
And, I want to address, when we come back, I want to address statutes of limitations. And although this sounds very legalistic and, you and I are both lawyers, Jennifer, but this is something that's very, very important for our listeners to understand, at how valuable these laws have been, which have been changed, in the last, maybe 10 years. But we're going to talk a little bit about the specifics of how those statutes of limitations being changed and lengthened, in some cases eliminated, how that has really helped victims come forward and perpetrators be caught finally. But I do want to ask where people can reach you. I know that you handle these kinds of cases, not just Jeffrey Epstein, but cases against churches and organizations where people have been victimized. How can people contact you?
The best way to contact me is through my email, jenniferfreeman@marsh.law. I'm at the Marsh Law Firm, or you can call me at the Marsh Law Firm through the main number. Either way.
You will see Jennifer as a commentator and speaker on these issues on Fox, MSNBC, PBS. She has been very much at the forefront of advancing change in the laws for child sex abuse and the survivors. And when we come back, I want to talk about the statute of limitations, and I also want to talk about the 2008 prosecution of Jeffrey Epstein, which a lot of people have not focused on, and I want to talk about how very unusual it was and what kind of deal he got. Jennifer Freeman, she is an attorney. She's licensed to practice in Florida and New York. She's with the Marsh Law Firm. She's dedicated her practice to protecting victims of sexual abuse, child pornography, discrimination, and exploitation. And we're talking about the Jeffrey Epstein case. Jennifer, let's pivot a little bit and talk about the statute of limitations and how it's changed in this country over the years to expand the ability for victims to bring lawsuits.
Sure. The statute of limitations, and by the way, I am the chair of something called Child U.S. Advocacy, which is working on changing these statutes of limitations around the country. But the statute of limitation, the problem is if you have a child sex abuse problem and it happened a while ago, chances are there's no criminal recourse. All you're going to have are civil claims because the statute of limitations on a criminal case can't be revived. A civil case, it can. So what happens with the statute of limitations and what happened with Jeffrey Epstein and what happened with Sean Combs is it is often the civil claims that drive the attention to this, and then the criminal prosecutors come forward. And that's what happened here. But it's really a problem because in a lot of states still, the statute of limitations is still really short. Before we changed it in New York, for example, you had to bring a civil lawsuit, before you turned 22 in order to bring a civil lawsuit, which is crazy. No one is, by 22 years old, prepared to do that.
Right. To come to grips with what happened to you. I mean, you know, whether people black it out, whether people don't want to come forward because of their parents or whatever it is. So what do you say to people who say, well, if you expand the statute of limitations or eliminate it altogether, how is that fair to victims? How is that fair to perpetrators who now have to defend things that may have happened decades ago? What do you answer? What is your answer to that?
Yes, I understand that argument. And the response is there's always some kind of corroboration for the abuse. People are saying, oh, there's fraud. People are going to come forward. But usually you've told somebody. You've told your best friend. You've told your parents, perhaps, eventually. You've told someone in your life. Or there have been tremendous red flags that this has been going on. Someone keeps walking in on you at school. You've complained. There are lots of reasons why you still have to bring your lawsuit. You still have to prove your case. Just bringing a lawsuit doesn't mean you win. So you still have to do your work, and the statute of limitations just gives you a chance to do it. It doesn't mean that you win automatically.
Absolutely, and jurors are discriminating. I mean, you know, the jurors in the Sean Combs case, you know, didn't really buy into all of the allegations that were made. And so, you know, Sean Combs will get a sentence, but it's probably not going to be what a lot of people were hoping, just because I think people don't always believe the claims of young women. I hate to say that, but it's very, very true.
Mm-hmm. It is true.
And Jennifer.
And men as well.
Yeah. Well, exactly.
Men as well.
Exactly. I mean, even more so in some ways, like the Menendez brothers, you know, they had corroborating people who they talked to about the abuse while it was going on. And, you know, and of course, we know what happened there. But again, that's a whole other story. I want to talk a little bit about the prosecution of Epstein. Back, I believe it was 2008. Can you tell our listeners the chronology of what happened and what the plea deal was and why it was just so, in my view, outrageously light?
I would like to do that, but I just want to say one more thing about statute of limitations, which is important to understand.
Sure,
which that
absolutely.
The statute of limitations allows you to identify who the predators are. So it allows the police, the law enforcement, to be able to stop future abuse. So this is very important. It's not just about the individual person with the claim, but it's also about protecting others.
Well, I will add to that the Bill Cosby case. You know, we had the one woman who brought a claim, was resolved and was reopened and she had a suit. And then all of a sudden, we now know there were 80 or so, 90 victims. And again, same with R. Kelly. I mean, we see that in Chicago. R. Kelly's a Chicago man. And, you know, people in the community apparently knew this was going on for years. And until you started seeing the parents come out and talk about it and bring the lawsuits, you know, you just didn't see any prosecutors taking it seriously.
Absolutely.
So,
but to go to the Epstein prosecution from investigation, because the prosecution was kind of lightweight, from 2005 to 2008, it started in Palm Beach County in this state and county courts and that law enforcement. And when that wasn't going anywhere, someone complained to the FBI. and the FBI got involved, and there was the U.S. Attorney's Office in South Florida got involved, and there supposedly was this big investigation that went on, but not really. They didn't get, for example, they didn't get the computers, which would have shown the child porn. But what did happen is Epstein, with his dream team of incredibly fantastic, for him, lawyers, got this sweetheart non-prosecution agreement where he basically got a slap on the wrist sentence, where he was sentenced to, you know, months in jail and only served, I think, 18-month sentence, 13 months served. And even then, he was out every work day on a work release, 12 hours a day, during which time some people say that he was continuing to abuse victims. So it was a horrendous, horrendous travesty, which is partly what our lawsuit is about, is to show that and show how the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI just failed to do their jobs.
And, you know, just so many pieces of this. Again, I'm only reading the accounts in the media, but, you know, what he was alleged to have done could have given him 75 years in prison instead, like you said, a few mm-hmm. months, and he had work release where he was walking out of the prison every day for 12 hours. And, you know, what is the explanation for that? I mean, it's a slap in the face to the victims. And my understanding is that the plea bargain went down without really even telling the victims about it. And they didn't even have a right to weigh in or to really know what was going on. Again, another slap to the victims.
The secrecy issue was horrendous for victims. They were sent many of them were sent letters from the FBI saying the investigation is ongoing while they're cutting this non-prosecution agreement with Epstein. It was just outrageous. But even the non-prosecution agreement itself wasn't even enforced by the U.S. Attorney's Office. For example, he was supposed to plead guilty to multiple claims. He pled guilty of sex abuse. He pled guilty to one. He was supposed to register as a sex offender. He got out from that. He was supposed to require imprisonment and jail time like a normal prisoner. Instead, he had this work release, special work release, and he was housed in a low-security, kind of cushy Palm Beach County stockade, separate from other inmates, referred to as Mr. Epstein, rather than what everyone else was called, would have been Inmate Epstein. So the whole thing is just stinks to whatever.
Yeah. Wow. And again, you know, not that you want to be a conspiracy theorist, but what options do you have when you see that kind of treatment? We have a texter who says, Karen, I want to salute you women who work nonstop to uphold justice and do uncomfortable work to uphold the justice system in America that is in a perilous way right now. I wanted to give that you a shout out there. Jennifer, you know, again, I know that you don't deal in conspiracy theories. You're a lawyer. You need to deal with facts. But one of the things that has really perplexed me is Alexander Acosta, who I believe was a U.S. attorney in Florida at the time, when he was interviewed about this deal, this sweetheart deal we just spoke about, he had words to the effect of Epstein belonged to intelligence. Have you heard that phrase?
I have heard that quote. I've seen it. And certainly there are, again, rumors about that, the connections of Epstein to intelligence and his possible, you know, we now know there's lots of videos, and what was the purpose of those videos? Were they used for some other nefarious purpose other than the nefarious purpose of child porn? Were they used to hurt others? We just don't have enough information to be able to assess that.
And if he was valuable from an intelligence standpoint, and there are all kinds of rumors that he dealt with the Israelis and this, that, and the other, he traveled extensively and had different passports. And again, we don't know, and we probably won't ever know in our lifetime, but that would explain in some ways why he got the sweetheart deal and why he didn't go away as soon and as long as he should have been. Going back to the whole thing, the person who's serving the most time is a woman for these crimes, mm-hmm. which is Ghislaine Maxwell. Has anyone really thought about or tried to cut some sort of deal with her where she could get a reduced sentence in exchange for the lowdown on what really happened and to what extent Jeffrey Epstein's wrongdoing happened?
I don't have that information. I can't speak to what the prosecutors are doing or have done in the past. There has been a rumor, and it's really just a rumor, that no one offered her a deal at the time. Why? We don't know why, but that is the rumor. Again, I don't know if it's true, but it is outrageous that she's the only person in jail for this, for 20 years, by the way.
Yeah, and she seems to know where the bodies are buried, and, you know, to trim off a few years to get to the truth of it would make a lot of sense. But
well, she has today's rumor or yesterday's rumors that she sought a pardon. So we'll see what happens with that.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be interesting. So you represent victims of sex abuse, and you do represent Mary Farmer, who is a victim of Jeffrey Epstein. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, you know, you get close to your clients when you have these kinds of cases. We all do as lawyers. And can you tell us what goes on in her mind when is she feeling empowered by the fact that you're advocating for her and filing these lawsuits? Is she frustrated? Is she being re-traumatized and re-victimized when these things don't go the way that they should? Tell us what the victims are thinking here.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about Maria Farmer in particular.
Sure.
But I certainly can speak to the way it often works. One of the most important things for most victims is to be believed. That's number one. And the second is accountability. And that's what these lawsuits, that's what the statute of limitations really gives you, the opportunities to address both of those issues, to have a chance to be believed and to get accountability, to get some kind of responsibility for what happened. And you don't feel as helpless when you do. Because as we all know from our own personal experience, depression is often related to feeling helpless and feel like there's nothing to do. There's nothing you can do to change anything. But this gives you can get in action over this. And that's very important, along with protecting other children and other people from these predators. So there's lots of good that can come of it. But there's a lot of guilt that also can come
from
people who haven't come forward or have come forward what they consider to be, you know, later in time. It is just a very complicated thing. You mentioned parents before, and I think that's an important thing to realize. Why do people sometimes take so long to come forward? Because they don't want to hurt their parents.
Right.
They don't want to make their parents responsible for this because it wasn't their fault. Or I've heard also now adults say, look, I knew if I told my dad, he would kill the guy. And you didn't want that. You didn't want to lose your dad or
right.
have your dad have to face that, or mom or whoever it is that was, you know, you were telling. So there's lots of facets of this, but this is often a beginning of a process of some kind of, I know it's trite, some kind of healing for the victim, but it's important.
And, you know, in this case, in the Epstein case, you know, it was particularly pernicious because he, you know, ingenious as people who do this kind of stuff are, you know, would get the women to procure others and would pay them to procure other girls to come and, you know, and be basically abused. And talk about guilt from some of the victims who were victimized themselves. And now they're like victimizing others, and that guilt, it has to be just substantial.
Yes. And those people were given supposed immunity under this non-prosecution agreement, which is another violation of the mandatory policies of the U.S. Attorney's Office. You give immunity to someone when you get cooperation. That's what immunity is for, usually. These people gave nothing.
Now, We just passed a law in Illinois, and I don't know all the details yet, but it has to do with making police officers and prosecutors a little more attuned to these sex abuse cases, which I really like to see because it is a special breed of case. It's different than a shooting. It's different than other things.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that prosecutors are doing, generally speaking, in the places where you practice, as far as understanding what happens when a victim reports a crime, how they're investigated, how they're believed, how they're dealt with?
There's been a tremendous improvement in this, and that comes along with the attention that this issue, because it's been really a sea change. Where did it start? Maybe the Me Too movement started it, and then it propelled from there. But there's been a tremendous change. There's child sex abuse units in many prosecution offices. There are victim coordinators that can help victims. So there's sensitivity, a lot of sensitivity. There are, you know, people that look at child pornography. Can you imagine having that job, Karen?
Oh, gosh.
Living as a prosecutor?
Yeah.
They get rotated out, hopefully, because that's a really, really tough job to continue to look at those. And, you know, you have to write out summaries of what's going on. It's a very difficult job.
We just have about a minute, but I want to kind of get your big picture view of this. When is this going to end? Because, you know, we saw Cosby and R. Kelly and all these mm-hmm. cases where you have these very powerful men who are surrounded by yes people, who are men and women, who are doing their bidding and paving the way for them to do what they want to do, however they want to do it. And how, you know, these perfect storms that are created for this trafficking, whatever word you want to use, when is this going to end? How do we put a stop to it once it starts?
Well, I think one way we try to put a stop to it is do exactly what we're doing, you and I today, Karen, is talking about it and making sure people hear about it and understand it. And thus the culture changes and the ability to see it faster is more apparent. You can see it faster. You can see what's going on. You can see the change in your daughter, your son. All of a sudden they're, you know, they were great students and now they're kind of trying to sneak alcohol at night or whatever's going on. You can see these things and you're alerted to this. And the parents are talking to their children about this possibility that, and trying to protect them. But how do you stop people from being criminals? I don't know that. I don't know how to answer that one.
No, you don't. Jennifer Freeman, thank you so much. And give us your contact information one more time.
Sure. Jennifer Freeman at marsh.law is my email. And you can also call me there at the Marsh Law Firm, M-A-R-S-H. Yes. Thank you so much, Karen. This has been a fascinating discussion. I so appreciate you putting some attention to it.
And you keep up the great work, Jennifer.